Trigger warning. This podcast contains discussions on domestic abuse and sexual assault. Hello and welcome to Virago Voices podcast. This is episode 4 of series 2 of Virago Health. Series 2 is entitled Topical Insights, and all of the episodes cover an issue which I think are topical. And they are covered usually by guest speaker, giving their expert insights. Each of the episodes share a common thread of impacting women and their access to healthcare. So, for me this week, I've been working and catching up on some reading. I've just finished the book Square Hunting by Francesca Wade, which follows 5 women in Britain in the 1920s and basically how they are changing societal norms. It's a really cool book. I didn't actually know a lot about the interwar era and what was happening, so I learned a lot. Interestingly, it also mentions Mary Stopes and how it came to be through providing accessible contraception for women. I definitely recommend the book. It's quite long and it took me quite a while to get through it, but it's worth it. So that's you up to date on what I've been doing this week. Very exciting because we're still in lockdown. Last week we talked about pronouns with the amazing 3-woman trio that makes up Safe Space. We discussed pronouns, what they are, how to use them, and then we also talked about our favourite topic on this podcast, which is Bridgerton, and the pretty shocking scene that the girls described. I definitely recommend having a listen to episode 3 if you haven't already. We also heard about the feminist movement in Mumbai, which I actually thought was really interesting and cool. Again, I've had lots of positive feedback from the episode. Although no questions this week, hopefully next week you'll have some questions for our special guest. Rachel from Scotland called the Safe Space trio role models and loved their honesty and open manner. Jasmine from Aberdeen loved the actions at the end and has recently added her own pronouns to her Instagram account. And as you'll see on the Virago Voices Instagram account, at Virago_voices, we have also added our own pronouns, she and her, to our account. So this week we have another special guest, and I'm pleased to announce that Becca Gilmore, who's a 4th-year medical student from the University of East Anglia, will be joining us on the episode. Becca is interested in both psychiatry and women's health and holds the role as Obs and Gynae SOC president at the University of East Anglia. And I met her through the society's Instagram account. I reached out to her after her society ran a charity event to raise money for their local domestic abuse charity. In the episode, we will be discussing the harrowing topic of domestic abuse, with Becca defining domestic abuse, explaining what COVID has done to the rates of domestic abuse, and then at the end, empowering us, as always, through how we can help the situation. As usual, any questions, comments, or feedback, please drop me a DM. So without further ado, I present to you Virago Health on Domestic Abuse and COVID-19 with Becca Gilmore.
Hi Becca, how are you?
Hi, I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. I'm so cold at the minute. This week has been freezing.
Yes.
So you're going to speak to us about domestic abuse and the impact that COVID-19 has had. I'm super excited for you to discuss this topic. So I'm going to pass the floor over to you to define domestic abuse to us firstly. Is that all right?
Yeah. So domestic abuse, when we talk about abuse, there's 4 different types. You have neglect, sexual, physical, and emotional. And when we talk about domestic abuse specifically, we're talking about it mainly going on in the home, between people with intimate relationships. And for the sake of this talk, we're mostly focusing on violence against women, because it can happen to anyone. It can happen in same-sex relationships, it can happen to men, but the most of the time it is women and their partners abusing them. And this is actually extremely common. 1 in 4 women in the UK would experience domestic abuse at some point in their life. So if you thought of that as like a heart condition, you'd think that's way too common. You need to do something about this. And it's something that unfortunately usually begins and certainly worsens in pregnancy. That seems to be the catalyst that sets it off. And if you look at the impact of it, it's staggering. The Royal College said they think domestic abuse just in England and Wales alone costs the economy £66 billion a year. And not only that, more importantly, there's huge mental trauma that comes out from it, obviously physical trauma as well, but the mental health problems can be long lasting in these women. And research is coming out showing that not only, you know, you have, if you have physical abuse, the physical signs from it, but these women are more likely to die earlier. They're more likely to get chronic conditions like diabetes. And if this happens in pregnancy, their babies are likely to be preterm or have lower birth weights. So really, it's a tragedy, and the effects just go on and on and on.
Thank you for that. That was really, really insightful. The statistic of 1 in 4, I think I've read that before, and it absolutely blows my mind. That is such a sad statistic.
Yeah. I mean, diabetes, it's now estimated 1 in 10 people have diabetes, and you think that's crazy. That's so common. But then, you know, domestic abuse is way more common than that. Everyone will know someone who's experienced it.
Yeah, that is really sad. And I like the kind of your starting phrase of defining the 4 types of abuse, because I think when we say the word abuse, people just think physical, but it's so much more than that. And actually, emotional abuse is really common and really quite insidious. People don't really notice it.
Definitely. And that's the way you get to the physical abuse, by manipulating someone, isolating someone. That's how you're then able to, unfortunately, do the other things.
Yeah. And the fact that it worsens in pregnancy as well is a really, really shocking point, because, as you said, you know, it doesn't just impact the mum, it then impacts the baby, and, you know, this cycle just continues and continues, because it's kind of long lasting, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's really sad. Okay, and then, you know, the whole topic of this podcast was how has COVID impacted on domestic abuse, and, you know, I'm kind of apprehensive to hear how it has, because I'm worried that it's probably worsened it. Is that correct, or?
Yeah. But basically, when the pandemic started, ever since then, we sort of had this other pandemic lurking in the shadows. And what people see in tragedies, so, you know, earthquakes, tsunamis, any sort of national tragedy, domestic abuse rates generally go up. When there was Ebola in Africa, domestic abuse rates went up. And there's all sorts of reasons for this. It's a stressful time to begin with, and that causes people to react in unfortunately different ways. But the unique thing about COVID-19 is the restrictions which have been put in place, which, you know, obviously need to be put in place. We need to stop the spread of the virus. But these restrictions mean that we are told to stay at home, and that traps people in. And before COVID happened, people would get opportunity to get out of the house, do other things, be able to sort of escape in little ways. But now everything is being magnified. It's a sort of catalyst. And now we're seeing this hidden pandemic. And not only are people trapped in, but there's a strain on finances. People are losing their jobs. That has always made domestic abuse cases rise, like in the recession, that made domestic abuse cases rise. And although there's no concrete evidence for the rising yet, we have seen an increase in demand on services, and we've seen an increase in the number of police reports of domestic abuse cases. And what it also means is because people are trapped in, those people who maybe would have left before, maybe left, you know, earlier, are unable to do so because everything is restricted. And now the government is saying, you know, if you are in a situation of domestic abuse, you can leave. But it's still very difficult because everything is so restricted. Mm. So yes, unfortunately, we are seeing a massive rise in these cases.
Yeah, that's really sad. And I like, you know, the kind of hidden pandemic of domestic abuse, because I think it really is hidden. I don't think people have heard about it at all.
No, it's not something people like to talk about. Mm. It's kind of taboo still. It's a very awkward subject for a lot of people, and it shouldn't be, but that's what it is, and people just don't like talking about it.
Yeah, and I, you know, even having this conversation, it's going to be quite a hard lesson for people, and you know, some people might not be able to listen, but I think this is really important that we talk about and get, you know, and to spread the word and spread awareness.
Definitely.
And I think that's actually quite interesting. I didn't know that natural disasters increase the rates of domestic abuse.
Yeah, just any sort of natural disaster, anything where there's a lot of sudden change in, you know, routine, when there's a lot of stresses, it just seems to magnify everything. I'm not saying people who wouldn't have committed domestic abuse suddenly commit it, but it seems where it was sort of lurking, or there was, you know, like emotional abuse going on, suddenly it just gets all magnified and we see more extreme cases.
And have we seen, has there been any statistics around the victims? Have they been women, and has there been violence against women perpetrated by men, or is there any of that, has that kind of statistic come out yet?
Unfortunately not. There is research going on, but it's all a bit muddled. Mm. But it's kind of anecdotal at the moment. People saying, yeah, we've noticed more of this, we're seeing more of that. But sort of conversely, they're noticing that women are speaking out less about it. People feel like they're not being taken so seriously by the police. There was some recent research which showed people feel like the police are trivialising it and they don't want to say about it because they feel like they won't be heard, considering everything that's going on, which is really sad. Yeah. It's going to mean people aren't going to talk about it as much until it boils over. It's not just going to stop. It will continue.
Yeah. And it's really sad that, you know, it's happening in people's homes where, you know, you talked about like women being trapped in their houses, and I see a home as somewhere you should feel safe. And it's really sad that, you know, people are out there trapped in their homes and not feeling safe. That must be such an awful, awful experience.
Definitely. And, you know, it's what happens behind closed doors. We're all behind closed doors at the moment. And it's so much easier to hide it, because let's say you had a bruise and then you went to work the next day and someone noticed it and they'd ask you about it and then it would come out, you know, you'd hope so. But now if things happen, you might not go out for like a week.
Yeah.
They might not let you go out. You're not going to work. You're not getting people picking up on cues. And unfortunately, this is sadly happening with children. Children aren't going to school or childcare. And those signs of abuse aren't being picked up on. Those odd behaviours that teachers are really trained well to look out for, that healthcare visitors are being trained to look out for, are being missed, because now I understand in most places healthcare visitors aren't coming. They get to fill out a written survey. So all those sort of physical and children developmental signs of abuse are being completely missed. Yeah. And it is a tragedy, it really is.
That really is. It really is a hidden pandemic, isn't it? You know, hidden in so many ways. Yeah. And I think, you know, physiologically being trapped in in somewhere that you don't feel safe means that your body always experiences a high amount of stress. And then, as you said, that leads to, you know, early death, diabetes, so many other health conditions, even like cardiovascular disease. And yeah, for women who are pregnant, yeah, that's not the situation that you want your body to be in, that, you know, is in a constant state of fear and stress.
Definitely not, yeah.
There's something else I was going to say and I cannot remember what it was. I think that was a really good point about, you know, not being able to pick up on all the signs. Do you think that, and I don't know if there's any statistics that's been out, that have come out, but, you know, domestic abuse has kind of a range of, you know, from the physical abuse to the actual, the tragedy of women dying at the hands of their partners. Has there been more statistics that have come out that, you know, women are unfortunately dying? Is that a statistic?
Yes. For the original March lockdown, mm-hmm, I believe there was an increase in the amount of women dying. But when I was reading through, I couldn't see any research for the recent lockdowns. I don't know why that is. Yeah. But yeah, women are unfortunately more likely to die. I think before this happened, two women a week died because of violence by their partner. Not to say again that men don't also die, that has increased. And I think it increased in the first lockdown. I'm presuming it's only getting worse and worse as we're in our third, fourth lockdown.
Yeah. So actually, you know, the domestic abuse, that the signs and symptoms that we normally pick up on, even like you said, the children going to school, but, you know, people come into A&E, people aren't really coming to A&E as much unless it's really serious. And that's a big place where we pick up domestic abuse. So actually not being able to pick it up at those kind of early stages could lead to, you know, worsening, higher morbidity and mortality. It's really sad.
I think so. Yeah, it is.
Really sad. Yeah, so I guess to kind of turn it into not a positive, but to try and make us feel that, you know, we can do something and empower us after having that, you know, really, really insightful discussion, what can we do?
So I kind of look at it on two levels. So from a broader view, you know, maybe stuff we can't get involved in so much, but from a government view, and then from an individual point of view as a healthcare professional or healthcare student. So if I start with the government point of view, personally, I think more money needs to be invested. I understand a lot more funding was allocated to domestic abuse and sexual violence charities. And it was easier to obtain legal aid. And what that means is it's you get free lawyers who can help you go to court and sort things out. But it's one thing saying that, but these services were already so chronically underfunded that that's not really going to make much difference. It's insufficient. They need so much more money than that. And they're not getting it. And the thing is, if you don't give that extra money to these experts, these charities who have done this for a long time, know what to do, know where this money needs to go to, then what we're going to see is more cases, more extreme cases, like you were saying. And this sort of trickles down. Like, imagine if you're a child and you're witnessing all this domestic abuse, you might get mental health effects. You might not engage with school so well. You might become unemployed. And you just get this cycle of things happening. And it costs money. Like, just look at it in a purely financial way. But it's also human tragedy if we don't get involved. And there's also quite disturbing that when these domestic abuse cases go to court, they are not being prosecuted. Or if they are, they're not getting very serious penalties. apparently prosecutors have been more willing to accept guilty pleas to less serious crimes without insulting the victims. So yes, they're getting like, oh, you know, you did this, it's bad, but they're not getting much time for it. And I think we need more laws. We need, you know, the government, the judicial system to be like, this is bad, domestic abuse is bad, instead of just making it easier for sort of offenders to get away with it. I think it's like 99% of people who go to the police don't have any prosecution brought against the person who did it. It's staggering. So people think they can get away with it, and you know what, they can. So from a government point of view, we need more money and we need more enforcement. And then if we look at it as healthcare professionals, then I think a few things need to happen. I think from a medical schools, we need more training. So I'm in my fourth year, and in my sort of women's health module, we had sort of one learning objective on it, and it was be able to recognise the signs of domestic abuse and the risk factors for it, which is really good. But what do we do if we recognise it? We need to be told, okay, if you notice this, what will you do about it? Because we are still on placement, we're interacting with people, and I think every healthcare student should get that. And I think people are uncomfortable talking about domestic abuse, and I think we need to become more comfortable with it. I think we need to have more routine inquiries. So when you take a history from someone, you know, depending on the body system, you ask a certain amount of questions, you ask specific questions. And I think we just need to introduce it into as many histories as we can. And why can't we introduce it into all consultations every time a woman comes to the GP? Why can't we ask? People just feel so uncomfortable about it. So I think there definitely needs to be more education and training so we can catch these cases early on.
Mm. No, definitely. I agree with all of that. And there's so much I want to unpick. Starting from what we talked about, just what you literally just talked about, and, you know, incorporating it into our histories, I think that's really important. Firstly, I think it's so important, particularly in women's health. You know, a lot of the time you have a woman by herself when you've got her in like a sexual health clinic or antenatal screening, and it's the perfect time to ask, you know, are you okay? One thing that I learned in my placement that will be very helpful to any kind of healthcare professionals listening is the heart questions. Have you heard about that?
I haven't.
No, so it's H-A-R-K, HARK, and they're like just four easy questions that you can just slot into the end of your consultation. So the first, the H stands for humiliation. So it's that kind of psychological abuse that we talked about. And it just asks, you know, within the last year, have you been humiliated or emotionally abused by your partner? Then the next A stands for afraid. And that's kind of looking at the physical abuse. So in the last year, have you been afraid of your partner? Then the R stands for rape. So that's talking about sexual abuse. You know, have you been raped or forced to do any kind of sexual activity that you didn't want to do? And then the K is kick. So have you been kicked, hit, slapped or hurt by your partner? So looking at the physical abuse. And it's just a really neat way of kind of covering. And, you know, you can even put it in questionnaires and just so it's slid in there. And you know, actually, when you ask patients about it, they're not offended by it. You know, you kind of explain, you know, these are questions that we have to ask all women. You know, don't take it. You know, I'm not targeting you specifically. We're asking all women these questions to make sure that they're safe and they always understand.
And that's so important to make the patient feel comfortable and be like, this isn't something you need to feel awkward about. This isn't, I'm not picking on you. Because anyone can have domestic abuse. Someone who you might not think looks like the typical domestic abuse victim, whatever people think that is, could be going through it. It doesn't, although it is more common in people who are going through financial difficulties, looks can be deceiving.
Yeah, and actually some of those questions might spark something in someone to say like, oh my gosh, you know, I do feel like that, and I didn't realize that was abuse.
Yeah, definitely.
And I definitely think, yeah, increased discussion about it. I think, you know, not even in healthcare professionals, in just day-to-day life, people should talk about it more. Because, you know, the statistic is 1 in 4 women. So 1 in 4 women will have gone through something, some form of domestic abuse. And we just need to talk about it and make women feel empowered to speak about it. And that's what this whole podcast is about.
Definitely.
And yeah, you're so right about education. I mean, we very briefly got, you know, we got the, you know, if a woman comes in and she's got, you know, a black eye, then ask her about domestic abuse. But, you know, I don't think it's always that clear cut. And the fallout from that, you know, what do you do with a disclosure? Like, if a woman tells you that she's been abused, what do you do with that? What questions do you have to ask? You know, that's all terrifying if you haven't done it before. And, you know, you spoke about, you know, the children involved and how the children can be affected by domestic abuse and how that can, you know, create this cycle in their life. You know, if a child's involved, we have to do safeguarding forms for them. But, you know, you don't know that unless you're educated on that. So I think that's really important.
Definitely.
And yes, I could talk about the government all day. I think what you said was it is a chronically underfunded, just a lot of things are chronically underfunded, but particularly domestic abuse. I think, you know, putting money into legal aid, yeah, that's great, but also most of these cases, as you said, don't reach the court because they're not taken seriously, or women aren't empowered to speak up and to speak out, or, you know, like you said, the police don't take them seriously and trivialize what they're telling them. So funding needs to go into that to empower women to be able to speak out, or empower all people who've experienced domestic abuse to be able to speak out.
Definitely. You don't want someone for the first time they're speaking to someone about this, for them to go away feeling disheartened and feeling like, oh, should I have said that? You don't want that. And I think that's what's happening.
Yeah. And I think I did read somewhere, you know, that if that happens to a woman or anyone when they make their first disclosure and they aren't taken seriously, they won't disclose again. And, you know, that can lead to... serious, you know, it can lead to a woman dying unnecessarily. It's as simple as that. So yeah, we need potentially more training for police and more kind of education for them as well to know how to deal with disclosures, just like medical students need. And I think what you said about, you know, giving money to charities who are subject matter experts is so spot on, because they are dedicated to the cause and know exactly where the money needs to go. I think that's really important. And lastly, the legal system itself. And I could talk about the legal system all day. We see it all the time. We see it in rape cases all the time, that, you know, it's just people just get away with it because you can't prove it and you can't do this and you can't do that. And the law is flawed massively. And it's just so sad. It's so sad. I mean, 99% was your statistic. Is that right? That's crazy.
Yeah.
99%.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I can't believe it.
And then you think, and people will just do it again if they get away with it. People will go on to other partners. It's, you know, you hear about women who were killed by their partner, and then you learn that actually they did quite awful things to lots of previous partners, but they always got away with it. And I don't know what would have happened if that person actually went to prison for like 5-10 years. It could have been very different.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. And, you know, it just reinforces bad behaviour.
Definitely.
I'm trying to think, I can't remember the law. They just approved a law that women can ask about partners' previous convictions. Claire's Law. Claire's Law. So Clare's Law is a domestic violence disclosure scheme, and it's named after Clare Wood, who was unfortunately murdered by her ex-boyfriend in 2009, who had a history of violence against women. And it allows women to inquire about the domestic abuse information that the police hold on a partner. So that's really helpful for people to know that if they are worried or concerned, that you can ask the police for that information under Clare's Law. But I guess, you know, other things that we can do on an individual level, what kind of advice would you give to people who are worried that their friend or colleague is being domestically abused?
I think the most important thing is to talk to them about it, actually have a conversation with them about it, not just suspect and then think, oh gosh, I need to go to this person, this person, this person. Actually sit down and talk to them, find out what's been going on and listen to them, validate what they're going through. Do not trivialise it. Do not be like, oh, that happens to everyone. Or, you know, oh, what are you talking about? No, we need to say this behaviour is wrong. Thank you for coming forward. You are so brave for coming forward. And then look at your local charities. And so I'm in Norfolk and we've got a good one called Leeway. If you phone them up, they'll give you all the right directions. They will talk you through what to do. And, you know, if someone does say this to you, just tell them they're not alone, that it's so common. It's not their fault and it will get better.
Yeah, no, I like that phrase of not your fault, because I think a lot of the time in these situations, people put it on themselves that I've got myself in this situation, it's my fault, I made him angry, that's why he hit me. You hear that all the time. I think that's a really important point. And I think just listening is really important, and it sounds so simple, but actually it's really, really powerful.
Yeah.
And yeah, in terms of local charities, I'll put some links into the bio for this podcast, but national charities, you've got Refuge, which is for women who need a place of safety, and Women's Aid. And there's usually you've usually got a local Women's Aid in your area. And they also give women support and a place of safety. I don't know if there's any other local ones that you know of, Becca.
So in our area, it's Leeway. But I'm not sure of any others nationally.
Yeah. This should be all on Google, shouldn't it?
Yeah.
And yeah, obviously, if this conversation has made anyone who's listening, you know, think that they have been in a situation where they've been abused by their partner, reach out to a friend or a trusted family member, or one of the charities that we've mentioned, and we'll put the links in the podcast bio. Anything else you want to cover, Becca?
I just want to say, we've said, you know, these services are underfunded, things aren't great, but if it is something you're experiencing, don't let it dissuade you. And if you're someone who's come into contact with someone who you think is experiencing domestic abuse, don't let that dissuade you either. There is still help. There is still something that can be done.
Yeah, I think that's really important. You know, there are people that will listen and care. Yeah, well, thank you so much. That is such a harrowing conversation, but one that's so important and so close to my heart in terms of what I'm passionate about. So thank you so much, Becca. You're so knowledgeable and so insightful. I really enjoyed that conversation. Well, not enjoyed, but it was a conversation that was very worthwhile. And I'm glad we did this.
Thank you for inviting me.
No problem.
Thank you for inviting me.
It was great. It was really really interesting insight, and I know everyone who's listening will think the same, so thank you so much.
Thank you.
I came away from this discussion with Becca both saddened and humbled, but also with a sense of being called to action. I've researched my local women's centre and checked what I could do to help the situation. If you're affected by any of the topics discussed in this podcast, please reach out to a friend or family member. Equally, if you need an impartial ear, reach out via the Refuge Helpline or the National Domestic Abuse Helpline. If you're in urgent need of help or assistance, please call the emergency services. Please do not suffer in silence. Next week, we're discussing feminism, my favourite topic. And at present, I don't actually have a special guest for you all. So the special guest may actually have to be yours truly. However, if you do know someone who would be suitable as a special guest, or you want to come on yourself and have a chat about feminism with me, please drop me a DM. It will be a lot of fun and I'm very excited for our final episode. I'm aiming to cover what feminism is, how it's evolved over the years, and how we can all be feminists. As always, if you have any questions about anything this episode has covered, please DM the Instagram or tag us in your stories. I will endeavour to answer your questions on the next episode. And I really want some questions this week. If you like the episode, please let me know and share with your friends and subscribe to Virago of Voices on Spotify, Apple Music or whatever platform you listen to this on, and even leave us a review or a comment. Thank you very much and have a lovely weekend. Bye.